Welcome to A Different Way of Traveling. This is a podcast where we discuss travel for persons with disabilities and special needs in South Africa and beyond with our host, Lois Strachan. Join us as we share inspiring stories of people who travel, exciting, accessible travel experiences, and showcase service providers who will accommodate those with special needs. And now, on with the show.
Hi there, and welcome to today's episode of A Different Way of Traveling, a podcast on accessible travel brought to you by Accessible South Africa. I'm your host, Lois Strachan. Today on the podcast, we're chatting with Tony Giles, aka Tony the Traveler. Tony is a traveler who is both blind and hearing impaired, and yet has traveled independently to almost 140 countries. And he's got his next countries chosen already. Before we chat to Tony, please help us out by giving us a review and rating on iTunes. And if you haven't already done so, it would be great if you hit the follow button, so you can receive the episodes as soon as they're released. Right, let's meet Tony the Traveler. Today on A Different Way of Traveling, we're chatting with Tony Giles, otherwise known as Tony the Traveler. Tony's joining us from the UK. How are you doing today, Tony?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you with us on the podcast. Thanks for making the time to chat to me. Can we start off by asking you just to introduce yourself to the listeners and tell us a little bit of your story?
So my name's Tony Giles. I'm 42 years old. I was born with a rare eye condition, which basically means I'm totally blind, but I had light sensitivity as a baby and as a young child. And then I went partially deaf between the age of 4 or 5, and my hearing got progressively worse over the years, so much so that I now use digital hearing aids in both ears. But I have no speech impairment, and my vision, apart from the light sensitivity, which is more or less gone, basically. From the age of about 18 or 19, I spent the last 22 years traveling the world by myself independently.
That's quite something to have done. So tell us just broadly about the travels that you've done. And I know that it's actually, with the amount of traveling you've done, it's almost easier to ask about where haven't you been. It's probably a shorter list than where have you been. But just in very broad strokes, where have you traveled to?
Yeah, so I spent the last 22 years traveling the world. Initially, I spent my time traveling and studying in the States. I got the opportunity to do a American Studies degree over there. And so I traveled around there and then went back seeing friends and then realized I enjoyed traveling. So I spent the first sort of 10 years in the States, Canada, South America, Brazil, Argentina, a little bit of Europe, Australia and New Zealand. And then sort of spent the last sort of 10 years going to more sort of difficult countries. Spent a lot of time in Africa, in West Africa. Senegal, Republic of Guinea, Ghana, places like that. And now sort of branching out more into India, Asia. I've been to Japan the last few years, Russia, Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, those kinds of countries. My life goal is to visit every country in the world. To date, I've visited about 140.
How many are left on the list?
Sorry?
How many are left on the list?
Well, according to the UN, there's 193 countries, and I've got about 70 of them to do. And then I got kind of got my own list of sort of places that are not sort of classified as independent countries, like the Falkland Islands and the Faroes, things like that, Kosovo. So, and then I want to visit every populated island in Greece, and things like that. Keep me busy.
That's quite a life's ambition to have. I mean, when I was younger, one of my biggest dreams was to go everywhere in the world and meet everyone in the world. And I think you're quite a bit closer to that
than I am at this stage. What is it about travel? What is the best thing for you about traveling?
Oh, it's the challenge. It's getting from A to B under my own steam or as much as independently as possible. In places I've never been to before. Trying to work out how I'm going to get from A to B and what will happen on that journey and who I might meet, what might happen. And for me, the unknown, and it's the thing that's satisfying for me, the getting to that end goal at the end of each day or however long it takes and who I meet on the way and the experiences I have and the, more so now, what I learn about myself and what I learn about the people and the cultures and the countries I visit. When I first started traveling, it was about escapism. It was about having a crazy adventure and drinking as much and all this kind of stuff. And now it's become much more a learning experience and finding out about people and countries. And people say, why do you want to go and see a country if you're blind? And I say, well, why not? Because to me, it's not about the vistas or the landmarks. It's about the people and the culture and how people live and how they cope with their day-to-day challenges, particularly in countries that are less, have less infrastructure than, you know, I do in the UK. That's what it's become. And hopefully I can inspire other people to go out and have a go at what they struggle to do.
Have you always been adventurous? I mean, as a young child as well, or is that something that you've developed since you've been traveling?
No, I think I was born adventurous. I was sort of born to travel. I went to school 30 kilometers away from my home from the age of 5 because there wasn't the support in my local schools for a blind, deaf child. Even at that young age, I was traveling, and then I went to boarding school when I was 10, over 400 kilometers from my family, and that was the first sort of desire to travel and go home and see my parents. And then I got the opportunity to go to the States as a 16-year-old, and that was so different from the UK. And then it was just a sort of progression, really. But I'd always been interested in being riding a bike, a three-wheel bike, from the sort of age 3 or 4. Playing football with my friends, and yeah, I had some very open-minded mum, and having an older brother and sister, she could see that I wasn't any different to them in terms of my intelligence or, you know, my interests. So I was just blind, so she knew if she got me educated, then I'd have a chance in the world. I don't think she ever thought I'd go and travel around the world and do cozy things, but she's kind of accepted it because it's what I wanted to do.
I think having an open-minded support system makes such a difference, particularly if we're wanting to travel. But let's shift to another question, the other side of that. What is it that you find is particularly challenging or difficult for you when you travel?
Obviously trying to access money from cash machines. When I'm traveling in countries that don't have the infrastructure like the USA or the UK, I have to find people I can trust. That's always been a challenge. Obviously, I can't read someone's face, so it's been about listening to people and kind of sussing out whether I can trust that person. How do they sort of react to my blindness? And then sort of listening and sort of sensing their vibe before I can sort of I can trust them to go to a cash machine and read the screen for me and help me get money, things like that. And also staying with people. For the last 10 years, I've been using something called Couchsurfing, where it's a website online and you can go and stay with people. I've always been a very sort of trusting person because I've always had to have assistance just to ask someone to help me cross the road and give me directions. I've always had to trust people. That's an issue. And then having different currencies on me at any one time, especially when traveling across a continent, I might have 3 or 4 different currencies on me when I've been in Africa or South America. being organized and hoping that someone won't rip me off when I buy something, because it's easy to give someone a $20 bill or a 10 rand note and not get back the change you think you should have because you can't see. Particularly in somewhere like the US when the money is all the same size. I've had that on occasion. I stayed in a hostel in Denver on one occasion and I had to give a key deposit. So I gave a $10 note. And when I brought the keys back 3 days later and checked out, I asked for my money back. And I only know when I went to pay the taxi driver, instead of a $10 note, it was a $1 note. So, yeah, things like that. But it's part of traveling and part of life. And it can happen to anyone. So I'm aware of that. But, yeah, things like that. Also, sometimes I've given my camera to someone to take a picture with me, and sometimes people have walked off with a camera. That's quite disconcerting. So, things like that, they're kind of difficult things. And also, the most hardest thing is crossing borders when you're blind, particularly in poorer countries. You don't see where your passport goes, and you have to sort of hope it's going to come back, and hope that you don't have to sort of pay money to get it back. So things like that, really.
How do you manage in that sort of environment? Because there is a certain amount of trust, a certain amount of control that one has to give over to somebody else in that type of situation. How do you manage
that? I think you sort of try and sort of make sure you're around other people when it happens. You've got some kind of witness or some kind of, you know, have a person that's some kind of security, and trying to get fellow travelers to do it at the same time. So things like that, really. And just kind of hope that people will be kind and not try to take too much advantage. And for the most part, I've been lucky. I've got Braille on my passport, so it makes it slightly more easier to identify for me. So it's trying to have as many sort of backup things as possible, or things that makes it as unique as possible, really. Take copies of my passport. But at the end of the day, it's about trusting people and a bit of luck and sort of my faith in my fellow human.
Have you ever been in situations where you felt at risk or felt threatened in any of your travels? Because you've traveled to a number of countries around the world that sighted people might look and go, I wouldn't be comfortable. Have you felt that sort of feeling?
And how very rarely. And I think the fact that from a young age, I've always had a positive attitude and a sort of carefree, slightly naive attitude, really. And never really worried too much about my safety. I think probably because the fact I can't see the dangers so much probably makes me maybe feel a little bit less afraid and less worried about it. I do remember feeling a bit uncomfortable when I was in Caracas, Venezuela, just being on the streets, really. Even though I was with a friend, I did feel aware that it was a very poor country and things could happen there. But not really anywhere else, apart from border crossing. That's the only time where I sort of felt slightly worried or disconcerted. Just being in crowds and being pushed about. And I guess not knowing if the passport would come back, or sometimes being in situations where I've not got my entry stamp. Things like that. I've been stuck in a coup d'etat, actually crossed the border from Senegal into Mali the day they had a military coup d'etat. I didn't know anything about it until I got down to the capital. And I was told the borders had been closed and the government had gone into hiding. And I thought, well, it is what it is. I couldn't really do much about it. So things like that have happened. But I tend to go with the flow, really. I'm out for adventure.
Which is in itself requires a certain skill set to be comfortable to just see what happens.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it's just kind of part of my character, and I sort of experienced lots of different things throughout my life.
And as you said, the adventurous side of your spirit.
Yeah.
So a lot of the trips that you do, you travel for quite extended periods of time. How much planning goes into those trips, and to what degree do you plan them?
So as a blind person, I've always said to other people, you need to do your research, because you can't just walk into a hotel or a hostel or pick up a guidebook and think, oh, let's go to this place. So I always have to have some knowledge of the city or country I'm going to, so that I can ask people, oh, how do I get to this tourist attraction? And I've always had to, wanted to know how to get from the airport to my accommodation. I always tend to book my first accommodation in each country, so I don't want to spend the first night on the street, especially if a foreign country, where the language might not be English. That's the kind of research I do, and then I'll research in each country the kind of main cities I want to visit, and have a sort of list of tourist places I might want to visit. But that's about it. And then I also want to know the currency of that country. And then if I'm going to somewhere where English isn't the first language, like Russia or Japan, I'll try and learn a few basic words to at least help me sort of get by. Hello, water, thank you. Because I feel that's just courteous. So that's the kind of research I do. And then, particularly when I first started traveling, when I was 19, 20, 21, once I was in a country and I had my first accommodation, I tended to play everything else by ear then and just get information by word of mouth and meet other travelers and do it that way. I do a bit more research now because some of the countries I'm going to, names of cities and places are a bit more difficult to remember. So, and I'll tend to do more research if I'm traveling with my girlfriend, just to make things a bit easier and more comfortable. And it does depend on the country. So I knew when we were going to Russia, I needed to book the trains in advance because there'd be no English in any of the train stations. And I just wanted to make it as easy as possible. But other countries I've gone to, I've done less research. So it does depend. And I also need to know that as a blind person, I'm going to need spare canes and spare hearing aid batteries, because I can get them in, say, South Africa or Australia. But it's going to be more difficult to, say, get them in somewhere like Papua New Guinea or Indonesia. So I have to be aware of things like that. But otherwise, I try and go with the flow as much as possible.
To what extent do you make use of technology when you're actually on your travels?
So I'm a little bit of a technological dinosaur. I was a bit reluctant. I used Braille growing up. I did most of my exams in Braille, and I was a bit reluctant to go from Braille to using a computer. And I eventually did, and I used Jaws, screen reading software. And I now travel with a laptop. When I first started traveling, I didn't use any technology at all. But I would phone my mum maybe once every 3 months in the time of the life. And back then, I didn't have a girlfriend, so I didn't have any restraints or any responsibilities. But since I've been in a relationship for the last sort of 12 years, I need to sort of contact her every so often. So I decided to travel with a laptop because it's just easier. And also I can research as I'm going as well. So it gives me a bit more independence. But I still don't use a digital phone or a smartphone like most people. But I don't like swiping. I find that very frustrating, even though there's speech technology on the phone. And I also struggle to hear them. My girlfriend's blind and she uses a smartphone and it talks to her and stuff. I'm not really comfortable with them. So, and also a lot of the countries that I go to don't have a lot of stable internet. And also I'm aware that something like a smartphone or that is quite easily stolen. I've had my laptop stolen a couple of times while I was traveling. I use technology to a certain degree. I believe I believe in using people and talking with people. I find that more helpful.
It's an interesting one, because for me that just brings up another question. Do you, you say that your family have been quite open-minded about encouraging you to travel and to go and experience things that you want to do. Do you ever get the sense that they worry about you if they haven't heard from you?
Oh, yeah, of course they worry about me. My mum will never stop worrying about me, but she realises now it's what I do. She's never going to stop me doing it. I'm a lot more sensible now than I was 20 years ago when I was drinking. And, so I email her as much as possible, and she helps me plan my trips a lot of the times anyway. She's actually made tactile maps for me. It's this kind of orange kind of glue stuff. She draws around the borders of countries for me, and I know how to feel the shape of each country. And then we put big blobs for the major cities, so I'm able to sort of work out where each city is within sort of location of each other, and plan my trips that way. My mum's amazing. I couldn't do any of this without her. But my brother and sister sort of worry more and don't really understand it as much. But, I'm just totally to them. So, that's what I do.
I think it's good. And I'm just curious about that side of things. I know how sometimes the people close to us do get nervous, but it's good to know that at least the technology is available now that we can stay more in contact.
Yeah. I mean, obviously my girlfriend worries about me and misses me when I'm traveling for 2 or 3 months, and he's a bit jealous because she's working and can't go traveling, but, sort of try and promise her to sort of speak every day or at least email. And, I say, I'm going on this trip for 3 days. I'm going to be out of technological contact. And she kind of understands for the most part. And kind of made it work over the year for the most part.
Yeah.
And when she travels with me, then she kind of sees and understands more what I do and why I love it, and she gets to experience some of that as well, which is good. But the ultimate travel for me is just traveling by myself independently. I feel free. I feel like a bird.
I think we'll dig into a few of the details about exactly how you go about the experience of traveling. I think you have touched on some, but I want to go just slightly sideways at the moment for the next question. And that is, what are your next destinations that you're wanting to visit? And what are your top 3 destinations that you've been to so far?
New Zealand's my favorite country. I could live there. I visited twice. I spent 3 months there when I was in my early 20s, and it was amazing. I think it's because it reminds me of the UK so much, and the weather's similar. The nature's similar, a lot of countryside and a lot of sheep, and a lot of places you can walk, and you're never too far from the sea, which is what I love. I need to live by the sea. I'm only about a 4-minute walk from the beach now, which for me is wonderful because I can hear it and smell it night and day. So yeah, I found New Zealand amazing. I found Brazil incredible in terms of music and energy and the food. They have these restaurants where you go in, instead of just ordering a meal and eating it and paying for it, you have buffets and you put as much food on your plate as you want, and they weigh it, and you pay for the weight of your plate. So that was very different. I just love Brazil, the energy and so many places to go every night and feel samba and salsa, and the very open-mindedness of the people, very natural. I don't know. Indonesia possibly would be my top 3rd country. Again, different culture, lots of smells, fruits. They had this fruit called durian. It's weird. It's all spiky and it stinks, absolutely stinks. But it tastes quite nice. That's a very strange fruit. And I like Indonesia because every island seemed quite different. One island I went to was largely Muslim and Islamic, and then another island I was Christian. So got to see the alternative parts of religion and the culture and how it sort of interacted. And then, again, the nature, I was able to climb volcano and smell the sulfur and swim in the ocean, do all kinds of different things. A very diverse country. Yeah, so they would be my top three, probably. And then Japan for its food as well. One of the most incredible food I've eaten in Japan.
And in terms of countries that you are most hoping to visit next?
Obviously, I'm going to go to Greece to see my girlfriend beginning of next month. But once the world sort of becomes less COVID, I really want to go to India. I think that would be incredible. I've been to Sri Lanka and smaller parts of Asia, but I think India will be the most ultimate challenge for a blind person. The chaos and the traffic and the amount of people. I mean, I've been in Tokyo and I've been in Mexico City, with millions of people on the street, but just that constant of movement in India on a day by day basis, and the smell. I mean, all those senses just being attacked constantly will be amazing. Bhutan, I really want to go to Bhutan, because again, that's a very different culture, and they sort of control their tourism, how many sort of people they let in at a time. And Nepal as well. I really like to explore Nepal and mountains. They're my sort of next sort of three destinations, hopefully.
When you're traveling, do you usually find that people are open and receptive to the way you operate, you know, with your blindness and your hearing impairment? Do you find that people are happy to engage with you and to talk to you and accept what's happening?
I would say in general, overall, yeah. I mean, there are certain countries where it's more difficult, but I would say the generosity and kindness I've had shown to me around the world over the years is staggering. It's for people who've taken me home and fed me, for people who've just given me directions, or just a comment passing by. And I find that most people and most countries I go to, but particularly countries that have got less sort of Western infrastructure and less sort of open to seeing disabled people day in, day out, I find those countries more receptive. Absolutely shocked, and they can't believe what a blind person is in their country traveling. And they sort of struggle to understand why, but sort of explain to them that I can talk with people and have a conversation, and you don't need to be blind to do that. Then a lot of people seem to get it and welcome me into their home and just to share a meal. A lot of people want to protect me as well, make sure I don't get run over, and it's quite, and I've also found it interesting is, in Africa, particularly in the rural places, in the villages, in the countryside, they're a lot more accepting, because they think, they're more used to seeing disabled people in their families, in their culture, as they're not so much in the cities. So that's kind of interesting. I found it more difficult in Eastern Europe and some parts of Asia, where they're just not used to seeing disabled people moving independently. They're hidden away. So they find that quite curious, but also quite difficult to really understand. And also language barrier in some parts of Eastern Europe. So that's been more tricky. And also in countries like Italy, surprisingly, I really struggled in Italy. I just don't want to really help. And my girlfriend speaks reasonably good Italian, and we still struggle. They just point. It's not much good if you're blind.
Yes.
So, but yeah, on the whole, I think I've been, I feel like people have really, opened up and at least been willing to sort of help me, if nothing else.
Are there any countries that you would discourage other blind travellers from going to?
Italy. I mean, if you can speak Italian, it really help you a lot. think if you're traveling alone, you nearly do need to really do your research on countries that have got less infrastructure. And you've really got to be confident in your mobility training. And I mean with a cane. Somewhere like Papua New Guinea, it'd be very, very difficult for most blind people to travel because it's just, you really got to be open-minded and really willing to travel rough. And yeah, it's just no infrastructure. And I think if you go to somewhere like Egypt, then you've got to be prepared to be very patient and you've got to be prepared to almost fight with the people to get them to leave you alone. I mean, that happens to any tourist, regardless whether you're blind or not. Yeah.
So what would you say are the most important skills for someone? You've mentioned good orientation and mobility. We've spoken about the adventurous spirit, the confidence. What else would you suggest is are the types of skills or personality?
Patience. You need to be patient. The more that you can understand your disability and accept your disability and be aware that the general public isn't going to understand your disability and know how to say the right thing or do the right thing and be aware of that and be willing to explain to them and willing not to get annoyed each time they do the wrong thing or say the wrong thing, because most people, they're not trying to offend, they're not trying to make you feel uncomfortable, they're trying to do the right thing. I know my girlfriend struggles sometimes. She says, I'm not an ambassador for blindness, but I sort of feel as I am. And I mean, she said, you can educate the public more about disability, then in the long run, it will make it easier for everyone. And we can't expect the general public to automatically understand and know what to do. Some of it's common sense, but some of it isn't. If you've never been exposed to disabled people in your life, then it's understandable, you're not necessarily going to know what to do or how to interact. It's still a big problem in the UK because the British people are so sort of shy or reluctant because they don't want to offend or do the wrong thing. They want to help, but they just have that sort of awkward. I go to America and it's totally different. It's a breath of fresh air because Americans come up to you and start speaking immediately. And I've always said to people, if someone offers to help you, all you can say is yes, please, or no, thanks.
I think the ability to communicate is so important for us.
It is. And it's something you learn as you get older, and the more mistakes you make, the easier it becomes.
Yeah. And also to know when to communicate and when not to. I think that's even more of a skill. But
yeah.
To be comfortable asking for help when and if one needs it, and to be polite if one doesn't need help.
Yeah. It's knowing how to say it as well.
Yes. Which can be a cultural thing to take into account as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tony, let's shift direction again. I want to talk about your books. You have three books out so far. One of them was released at the end of last year, 2020. Tell us about your books.
Yeah, so my latest book is called Seeing a Slice of Southern Africa My Way. It was a trip I did in the sort of 2004, beginning of 2005, where I was basically wandering the globe. So it was about my introduction into Africa. And I simply went there to sort of continue my adventure of an escapism, self-exploration, really, and trying to come to terms with my life, my disability, and a rejection of love I sort of was going through. So it's, about that trip. I started in South Africa, with no real idea where I'm going to. There's a rough idea to possibly get to Egypt in 6 months' time, and but as far as Malawi, that's what that book's about. It's about exploring Africa from my point of view, from a blind person's point of view, and the crazy experiences I had, and bungee jumping and skydiving, which I've been doing on and off for 20 years. So that book is out at the moment. It's ebook only, and available on the usual ebook websites. There's exploring the smells and sounds and the people I meet and the adventures I have. And I also have two other books. My first book was Seeing the World My Way. It was originally published in 2010 in print. And that was about why a blind person would want to go and see the world, quote unquote. And the sort of raw, crazy adventures I got up to. My younger days of drinking and partying and trying to explain how a blind person travels and how he sees the world, not necessarily through sight and through vistas and through buildings, but through senses and walking up mountains and bungee jumping and how that sensation feels like. And then the second book I published called Seeing the Americas My Way, about 6 years afterwards, and that was about coping with being blind after I'd stopped drinking and trying to come to terms with emotional experiences and stuff. So they're my three books, and hopefully they sort of tell my story and why I travel and what it gives me, and hopefully also it sort of shows people that, with disabled or not, that they can live their life and live their dreams and do things they want to do. And mine's a kind of extreme version of that. That's sort of kind of what the books are about.
As an author myself, I know that there are some books that one needs to read all three, starting at the beginning and working through to the end. Does one have to do that with your books, or can we pick up any one and dive straight in?
They are a trilogy, but in essence, people can start with the latest one or the first one or the middle one. Get an idea of me and my journey, and they are all slightly different. But it's open-ended. And I think everyone will get something out of each book.
Are you planning?
If nothing else, they will at least have a laugh.
Are you planning on writing more books after this, the one you just released?
Probably eventually. I'm sort of having a rest at the moment. I'm sort of toying with ideas, but we've probably got more stories of my African adventures to write. Eventually, long term, I'd like to get into fiction, maybe kind of travel fiction or action fiction, kind of things I read. So I sort of write in spurts. I like writing short, long pieces. So I like sort of writing articles on Facebook and on my website. I kind of enjoy that. But writing can be hard work, especially the editing. Oh boy.
That is so true. And it seems to take forever.
And you don't want to stop. You think, oh, I don't know that word change. Just something like perfection. My mum says you need to stop now. Okay.
I think that is part of the hard parts of writing, is to let the book go and let it go out into the world. Yeah. It's a tough thing to do.
Yeah, starting and stopping. Yeah, once I start, I can flow. But starting, I'll do it tomorrow, and then stopping.
Yeah. Tony, if people would like to find out more about you or would like to contact you, how can they do so?
They can contact me through my website, which is www.tonythetraveller.com, and I spell traveller with two L's. And I can also go to my Facebook, which is also Tony the Traveller, and I'm also on YouTube. They can contact me through my website and my Facebook, and my books are available on the usual websites. They're all ebooks.
Correct. Thank you. Last question. Many people with disabilities are in a situation where either because they are quite sheltered by family or because they're uncertain of the unknown, they're a little anxious about that, that they are nervous about traveling. Why should they do so? What advice would you give?
I think and feel everyone should try traveling once, whether that means going to a place or a different town for a day or a weekend or a week or 2 weeks, whether it means going to a resort and sitting on the beach or doing a cooking class or walking up mountains or in the countryside or adventuring out for 3 months. I think everyone should try it, and I don't see why almost anyone can't have a go. But I do realise that what I do is slightly more extreme, and that wouldn't be for everybody. But I think people should try it. And when I first started travelling, I went to countries I could speak the language, like America and Australia, and I understood the infrastructure, so I knew I could probably cope with most things. So I recommend that people do their research if they want to go to a tourist attraction for the day or another place for the day. And maybe go with someone, go with a friend or a family member and just try it. And if you like it, then maybe do another weekend and then just baby steps. That's how I started traveling. And go from there and then just branch out a bit more each time or each week. And you'll discover that you'll discover new places. You'll discover things you like. You'll discover things you don't like. If you don't have a go, if you don't try, you'll never know. And the more you do something, the more confidence you'll get. And then you'll suddenly start to believe yourself in more, and you'll discover so many things about yourself. And it's just so much out there. And it gave me so much confidence, so much understanding about myself. It's improved me as a person. Meeting so many different people and different cultures and learning about different religions and how people live and believe and how people interact when they're different cultures alongside each other, and about myself and about how people interact with my disability and how they understand my disability or not. And that's allowed me to grow and understand my disability and become a better person, I think, I hope. So there's so much out there for everyone. So just try it. And if you don't like it, then you can go back home and,
Just fair enough. Go. Some great words there and some very true words. Tony, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me today. It's been
great
hearing some of your adventures, and I've had the privilege of reading at least one of your books, seeing a slice of Southern Africa my way, and I can definitely recommend it to other people, particularly those who don't know much about Southern Africa, although I'll say that I learned something about the countries that I've visited as well, so it was really great to read it, and I would recommend it. But thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been great to chat to you.
Thank you very much. It's been great. Pleasure.
By the time this episode comes out, Tony Giles will already be back traveling again, and we wish him success on his next travels. Our travel quote today comes from travel writer Pico Iyer, who said, "We travel initially to lose ourselves, and we travel next to find ourselves." Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of A Different Way of Traveling. We look forward to talking to you next time.
That's it from us for this time. You can find Accessible South Africa on the web at accessiblesouthafrica.co.za, on Facebook and Instagram at Accessible South Africa, and on Twitter at AccessibleSA. You can also email us at podcast@accessiblesouthafrica.co.za. Editing by Craig Strachan, using Hindenburg software. Our theme music is by Lu Chil Chow, based on a motif by Lloyd Stratton. Credits read by Musa Izulu. Thank you for joining us on A Different Way of Traveling. We'll see you next time. Until then, happy travels.